Welcome back to New Hampshire Today, the weekend edition. Jeff Chittister with you. As always, thanks for taking time out of your day. Don't forget, as I mentioned last segment, I am going to be in studio this week. And there's a few times I'm going to be in the studio, so I hope you will join in and listen. I really encourage you to download the iHeartRadio app. That way you can listen to the station anywhere in the world at any time you want. So it's just the easiest way to listen to the show. So I'm going to be in studio election night, Tuesday, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. to drop in and talk about what is happening with the local races. So I'm going to keep you up to date during 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. We'll be bringing guests in the studio and on the phone to talk about the situation. Additionally, we will continue having coverage throughout the night with our Fox affiliates. That information is going to be brought to you. And then on Wednesday morning from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., I will be in studio. And, of course, we're going to talk about the results of the election. We'll talk about other things as well. So Wednesday in studio hosting. And then Friday, I'm back in studio again. I'm hosting from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. too. And we've got some great guests that are going to come in and talk about the election and talk about other things that we need to be thinking about as well. I also like to remind everybody, too, that I do an article, and I hope that you read this. You can find it at Seacoast Online. You can also find it in print at Foster's and the Portsmouth Herald and several other papers throughout New Hampshire that happen to pick it up. It also gets picked up nationally, depending on the topic that I cover. Now, one thing I do want to point out, Seacoast Online, quote, is a paywall. But remember, you get three free articles. So if you sign up, you can get a membership to access my article. You get three free articles a month. So, you know, that pretty much covers you for most of those articles. A few days later, the article appears up on my website as well, jeffchittister.com, jeffchittister.com. Hey, so I wanted to talk about this week's article. So for those of you who have been paying attention, I've been keenly focused on this election. Over the past few weeks, I've talked about Biden's policies or proposed policies. And so this week, what I do is I address Biden's pandemic plan. Now, the reason why I address Biden's pandemic plan, for one reason, is I was sitting at home and I was watching TV and a commercial came up and it basically spent about a minute and a half telling me about this great Biden pandemic plan. It doesn't tell me any of the details about the plan. So I went out and looked at it. And when I looked at it, the first thing that came across my mind is that it was deja vu all over again. I had seen this plan before. Now, contrary to the comments made by Vice President Pence during the last debate, I went into a lot more detail about exactly what Biden's plan was and where I had seen the similarities of that plan. So the first thing I want to point out, and I point this out in my article, is that we have to remember that we're a federalist system. Our form of government is a federalist form of government, which means we don't have central control. When you talk about crisis and emergencies, almost all the initial reaction and most of the reaction that has to happen during any crisis, like a pandemic, has to come from the local municipalities and the state. The government is merely supposed to serve as backup, as an additional support. So when we look at things that happen like in a hurricane, it's all incumbent upon the local municipalities to be ready to address those issues. Think about it. They have the police, they have the fire, they have all the health services. And then it's supposed to be the federal government that comes in and provides additional aid they may need. Now, lately, as we've seen over these last few decades, the federal government has been playing a larger role, which is why it fails. Because if you have a situation that covers the entire nation all at once, it breaks down pretty quickly. That's why we're a federalist form of system of government, and that's why local municipalities must be prepared for these types of things. They're better able to address them. Plus, if it happens to everybody across the country, we won't get caught in the breakdown. We'll be able to take care of our local citizens. So that's the point I make about that. First, it's the federal system. The second point I make is that you heard, and you don't hear it as often, that Biden and Obama left a 68-page pandemic playbook. And the reason why they did that is because of their disastrous response to the N1H1 outbreak. And so their response to that was completely disastrous. So they left this playbook. The thing I want to point out about this playbook, do not tell me that something exists and don't think that I'm going to not look at it, because I'm going to look at it. So I went and looked at this 68-page pandemic playbook. Few things I want to tell you about this playbook. It's nothing more than a PowerPoint slide. That's exactly what it is. It's a PowerPoint slide. So I want you to think about the last time you created a PowerPoint slide or looked at a PowerPoint slide. There's no way that you could create a 68-page PowerPoint presentation and try to tell us it's a playbook. It's not a playbook. Here's the thing that this playbook does. What it does do is kind of go through some scenarios. If this were to happen, if it was to happen in a certain way and the magnitude of what that crisis might be, this is how the federal government would respond to it. Which departments would lead, which departments would come in support, and how that would fluctuate depending on the magnitude of the crisis. That's exactly what this PowerPoint presentation tells us. Here's something you should know, though. That if you look at just the basic understanding of that PowerPoint presentation, the Trump administration did exactly what that playbook said. How they responded to this pandemic was exactly what would have happened if anyone had read that playbook. So there's the first problem with it. The second problem is this, is that you would think, if you're going to tell me that you have a pandemic playbook, you would say in there like, okay, if it's something like COVID-19, how many ventilators do you need depending on the magnitude? If the magnitude is regionally based, it grows larger to several states, if it grows larger to half the country, then you would have that information in there, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you think a playbook would have that in there? No. The playbook doesn't. It doesn't tell us how many ventilators we're supposed to have, keep in storage, and keep in emergency backup. It doesn't tell us how to distribute those ventilators. It doesn't say anything like that. It doesn't tell us how much PPE equipment we should keep in storage for these types of crises and what we should do if the crisis gets out of control, how we get that additional supplies. It doesn't have any of that. That's not a playbook. And that's why the media told you about it initially, never bothered showing it to you, never bothered to tell you where the link is so you could look at it, because it really doesn't contain any real valuable information. But on the surface, the basic response by the federal government to these types of situation is exactly what the Trump administration did. Now, let's look at Biden's plan even further. So the first thing in Biden's plan is develop and deploy rapid testing. Well, guess what? Too late. The first thing we have to remember is that even after the disastrous CDC launch with the test kits, many people forget about that. Remember those first few weeks that the CDC launched those test kits? It was a failure. They weren't working right. They weren't being distributed right. Well, an initial investigation into that, and we'll get more investigations, I'm sure, found out that this was a systemic problem within the CDC for decades. So for decades, this problem was known and had occurred before in the CDC. They didn't rectify it. And it caused this initial problem at the beginning. That's not Trump's fault. It's inherent to the system. And this is why we need to be more crucial in this. The next thing about this, is that up to now, right now, folks, the U.S. government has performed over 140 million tests to date. We're second in the world with most tests by volume in testing. How can we be faulted? In a nation of 325 million, more than half have already been tested. We're on pace to be beyond 200 million by the end of the year. So once again, when your plan is to have rapid deployment of testing, too late. Trump has already done it. Now, if we look at the other parts of the plan, coordinate countrywide future-facing national effort to acquire, produce, and distribute PPE test kits and machines, lab supplies, and other critical supplies, including fully utilizing and authorizing the use of the Defense Production Act. Once again, too late. Apparently, unbeknownst to Biden and the media, Trump administration invoked the Defense Production Act back in March. But he did something else. Trump did something else additionally. He personally reached out to those companies that had been identified who could retool and realign their businesses to provide supplies. He didn't just tell everybody, because that's what Biden wanted to do. He just wanted to lay out and say the Defense Production Act is for every company and start trying to have companies that were ill-prepared, ill-equipped, and ill-staffed to try to make this equipment. That would have logistically caused more of a nightmare for people trying to manage this process than it would have helped. Trump did something extremely smart. He used his business savvy and reached out to these key companies. First, said, we believe that you are well equipped to retool and create this equipment. Can you do it? And they said yes. To the point now that here's what we have, folks. We have a surplus of almost every PPE supply, and it's all made in America. We have a surplus of ventilators. We found out early on we didn't need as many ventilators as we wanted because doctors started to take people off the ventilators because the recycling method was actually causing more harm. But we did rise to that occasion. So when we think about that and the Trump administration reaching out to people like Owens Minor, 3M, Honeywell, other companies to start helping with the N95 masks and other PPE supplies, we did that. We talk about Ford, GM, Tesla, all these companies created ventilators. So that was done relatively easy. But once again, Trump didn't do things that made that felt good, that felt good. He did things that were good, that worked well. So the next thing I want to talk about the Biden plan is to ramp up large-scale manufacturing as many vaccine candidates as necessary. Well, this is a brilliant idea. And what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to take a break and I'm going to come back and finish this analysis. I highly encourage that you read my article referencing this and share it with everybody. It's a distinct breakdown of exactly what the Biden plan was proposing and how we have already done that. But the media does not want to tell you about the successes of this president. Look, a lot of people made mistakes. A lot of organizations made mistakes. And that's always going to happen, which is why the pandemic playbook, which is why when we address emergencies, the local municipalities, those closest to the issue, should be responsible for the majority of the response. That's how it's always been. In fact, the 68-page Biden-Obama playbook does that. It says the local municipalities and the states are to address these issues, and then this is when we get involved. That's something that gets missed when we go through this. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. I'm going to come back and I'm going to talk a little bit more about the Biden plan in our next segment. Welcome back to New Hampshire Today, the weekend edition. Jeff Chittister with you, reminding you once again, Tuesday night, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., I will be hosting the election coverage on the air. So you can go ahead and download the iHeartRadio. And then Wednesday morning, I'll come in and we'll just kind of wrap this whole thing up and talk about the election as well. We will be having key guests coming in to talk about certainly the election and some of their thoughts as well. And then next Friday, from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. again, I will be hosting the New Hampshire Today show, and we'll be talking about some of the things that happened during the week, but we'll also put a lighter tone on to get into the weekend as well. So I was talking about my article this week, which addresses Biden's pandemic plan. And actually, you know, I'm going to be doing more of this to look at plans when we start thinking about what's going to happen next, regardless of who the president is and how these plans might be potentially helpful or harmful to us. So where I left off was, I was looking at Biden's plan, and I left off with ramp up and large-scale manufacturing as many vaccine candidates as necessary. That's a brilliant idea, but the problem is that Trump had already done that. In fact, the Trump administration's Operation Warp Speed started in early spring, and HHS came right out of the gate, and they did a $600 million-plus contract with Emergent BioSolutions, one of the top, if not the top, organizations to help with this type of program in the world. So what the federal government and Emergent BioSolution Partnership, they've done is they've provided this unprecedented coordination in getting the vaccine developed. So much so, when you think about it, they've worked with Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, BioNTech, Modem, a bunch of other companies, along with the National Institute of Health, to make sure that they could have millions of a vaccine when it's ready, should people want to go ahead and take that vaccine. But the interesting part about this is that a journalist, Don McNeil of the New York Times, who actually does medical reporting, reported recently that Operation Warp Speed, the program in which Trump used to get this vaccine and other types of treatment up and running quickly, has been remarkably efficient. New York Times says it's been remarkably proficient. But once again, when you have Biden saying that this is his plan, it's already been done to efficiency to the point where by the end of the year or early next year, there will be a vaccine available. But there are currently aggressive treatments available thanks to this program. Biden also said that he wanted to start stand up multiple hundred bed temporary hospitals in any city that was affected by using the military. Here's a problem with that. In March, the Pentagon pushed back on this part of Biden's plan, said it was not feasible. However, some states like New Hampshire used a sounder plan by utilizing their National Guard units as field hospitals, so using them as backup. But guess what? New Hampshire was great with that kind of program, but no one used them. The doom and gloom, the pandemic porn that came out early on in this pandemic frightened us all, And we put all these things into play, but no one used those hospitals. Additionally, let's not forget that the Trump administration also deployed hospital ships, the Comfort and Mercy, to hot zones to render aid. So L.A. and New York being the big ones. Never got used. So Trump didn't do enough, huh? Never got used. And then FEMA set up filled hospitals at the Javis Center in New York City, and it was largely unused, and it got closed down in May without being used. So once again, the federal response was appropriate to the situation, exactly what the playbook said that it should have been done. And then starting at the end of March, people aren't aware of this. The local news was aware of it. The national media decided not to report on it. Numerous federal disaster medical assistant teams were deployed to hospitals throughout the country at the request of those hospitals. So when the hospital requested these specially trained medical teams from the federal government that included doctors, nurses, equipment, all that stuff, when that request was made, every single one of them were fulfilled. Every single one of them fulfilled. Now, look, here's the thing about this, folks. Mistakes were made at every single level, and it will continue. This is a problem within our system and has been around for 60, 70 years. We don't address this. We waste our money and we waste our efforts in other areas when we should be focusing on these types of things. The federal government should not be leading on these issues, no matter what happened. Let's not forget that when President Trump tried to lead on this by closing down the borders, putting people in quarantine who were coming back from China, he got called racist and xenophobic. The news media, NBC, CBS, all did stories of these poor people being isolated for 14 days or maybe longer, depending on the conditions. I think at some point, most in the media and most politicians are going to purge everything they said about in the early part of this pandemic so as for history not to condemn them for part of the problem, if not all of the problem. This president's communication style is different at times. And sometimes it it never matches what he is actually doing. And all these things are happening. In fact, over and over again, when we look at things that the federal government was supposed to be doing, they did extremely well. So what else is Biden's plan? Now, we already know that he said he wants to do a national mask mandate. He cannot do that. Constitutionally, he cannot do that. What he is going to do is any aid for pandemic relief that is going to be offered to states or municipalities will come with the grip of the federal government saying, we are going to keep the money we took from you, not give it back to you, unless you do this mask mandate. If you do not do this mask mandate, we're not going to give you the money. That's brilliant. Let's hold people hostage. Let's not forget the federal government does that to New Hampshire already because we don't have a seatbelt law. But we say no to them anyway. And we still have one of the highest compliance of seatbelts. In fact, nationally, above average, 86% of the people wear masks in situations that wear the mask might help. We do that voluntarily already. Should people want to do that? The other thing is that if you look at Biden's post plan, so what is he going to do after this? And I kind of alluded to this during my interview with Matt Maurer. Stanford University, the Hoover Institution, looked at Biden's post pandemic tax and regulatory plan, and it's going to kill the economy. Biden's economic intervention could distort labor incentives. It's going to kill jobs, leading to 4.9 million fewer jobs. It's going to see a drop of 6,500 in medium household incomes, and consumption is going to be lower by $1.5 trillion. It's also going to shrink the economy by $2.6 trillion. Stanford, not some right-wing lunatic college. This is Stanford University. Five independent think tanks have all come out similar studies. This Tuesday, we have a great responsibility. And I've said it over and over before. Every single one of our elections are the most important elections we have. Every single one of them, ladies and gentlemen. This one is the most important election in your lifetime until the next election, because it'll be the most important election. And I encourage you to get out. I have been, as many of you know, critical of this president. But I will be voting for him. It's a no-brainer for me. The Biden campaign is horrendous. His policies will destroy this country. his family is corrupt. And as much as I don't like President Trump's tweet, that's not what I'm electing a president for. When we look at his policies, when we look at how he responded, remember, he was fighting a hostile Democratic Party. He was fighting a hostile, biased media. And as my article states, and please read my article, and please send it to your friends who keep bashing this president, I challenge anyone to refute the facts that I put in there. This is the most important election in our lifetime. And the next one will be the most important election of our lifetime. But we have to make the right decisions, and we cannot make it on the biases and the hostile actions of the Democrats. They cannot be rewarded for what they did. That's all we have time for this week. Join me Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, Friday morning, all this week. And do not forget, L-F-O-D. Live free or die.
This has been New Hampshire Today, Weekend Edition, with Jeff Chittister on News Radio 610 and 96.7. We'll be back next week. And don't forget to tune in to New Hampshire Today with Jack Heath, Monday morning from 6 to 9 on News Radio 610 and 96.7, New Hampshire's news, traffic, and weather station. Out here in the-